Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's program, Reinvention Stories, and later in the program, Mona Vollmer with the National Air Force Museum Foundation. We'll talk about operations there and how sequestration is affecting the foundation and the museum's exhibits. Up first, the weekend news. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base says more than 10,000 civilian employees got furlough notices beginning Friday. Civilians working at the base already knew that federal budget cuts would likely force them to take some mandatory unpaid time off this summer. The U.S. Department of Defense said 680,000 civilian employees will get 11-day furloughs starting July 8th, one day a week for 11 weeks. The Dayton Daily News reported that base officials initially estimated 13,000 employees would be subject to furloughs, but it turns out that 2,300 civil service workers will be exempt. The 88th Air Base Wing at Wright-Patterson is reducing spending by $30 million between now and September. The Air Force Museum did announce that it was canceling both the annual giant-scale radio-controlled model aircraft show and the July and August family days as a result of sequestration. According to Wright-Patt Museum officials, both events were canceled because of those furloughs beginning July 8th. The museum's 95 civilian employees will be affected by those furloughs, though museum officials say the main complex and its exhibits will remain open to visitors during regular hours. You'll hear more about that later in WISO Weekend. The museum says the opening of an art exhibit highlighting the Tuskegee Airmen will not be affected, and the museum will continue with Family Day on June 1st. Radio-controlled aircraft clubs like the Dayton Wingmasters and the Dayton, Ohio Giant Scalers are just two of the groups normally participating in the giant-scale radio-controlled model aircraft show that was scheduled for Labor Day weekend. This would have been the 18th annual air show for model aircrafters. The event is one of the largest of its kind in the United States and draws more than 30,000 participants and spectators. A Republican senator and a congressman from Ohio say the key question about the Internal Revenue Service's handling of conservative groups is who in the Obama administration was involved. Senator Rob Portman and Representative Steve Chabot spoke Wednesday evening to a gathering of Tea Party activists in Cincinnati. Cincinnati has been a focus, or ground zero, as one Tea Party leader called it, after disclosures that the agency employees there subjected conservative groups seeking tax-exempt status to special scrutiny. Chabot says investigations are still unfolding and it's important to follow the facts and not to overreach. He and Portman both say the question needs to be answered is how high up did that policy go? The Obama administration claims no senior officials were involved in the targeting. Several new pop-up shops have opened up in Dayton recently. The pop-up project began as a way to provide low-risk, low-cost options for entrepreneurs to set up shop in vacant building spaces in downtown Dayton. The project has seen its share of success. The latest businesses to open as part of that project are All Pilates on South St. Clair and Green Baby, a shop that offers environmentally friendly products for families, from baby products to health and healing items. These two businesses join a handful of others that have found life through the pop-up project, an initiative of Generation Dayton, Up Dayton, and Activated Spaces. It's also a strategic element of the Greater Downtown Dayton Plan. Scott Murphy with Activated Spaces says the project is making an impact.
In the past year and a half, just from the pop-up project alone, we've filled over 10,000 square feet of space. The pop-up project tenants themselves, as a result of the new businesses that started, and this is only just counting the ones that are still in business, employ over 20 people. So we're pretty excited about the economic impact of the project.
Activated Spaces connects building owners who have vacant spaces to entrepreneurs interested in starting a business. And a temporary lease is arranged at below market value. The building owners get some income out of the space, and the new business owners get a shot at running a successful business. Lease conditions can change, and a business may need to find another space. That was the case recently with Peace on 5th Street and its owner. But Murphy says all parties know what they're getting into, and the benefit to these arrangements extend beyond the two parties involved.
Retail and any kind of business, you know, they feed off of each other. They all want street traffic. So I think everybody's happy just to have neighbors. And I think in the not-too-distant future, there's a point where the pop-up project won't be needed and the market will take care of itself.
Until that time, Murphy says the pop-up project will be there to support new businesses with marketing, graphic design, and other support services to give them the best chance at success. Governor John Kasich was in Wilmington Thursday to highlight new jobs coming to that city. As WISO's Emily McCord reports, the governor was joined by local officials and business leaders to celebrate commitments by companies creating more than 500 jobs.
Since international shipping company DHL left Wilmington, the city has been a poster child for the effect the recession has had on communities. Governor Kasich says the private-public job creation entity Jobs Ohio has secured pledges that six companies will build or expand in the city. Kasich says while it's not one big company replacing the 8,000 jobs that were lost in 2008, it's a step in the right direction.
You know, I'm a believer that sometimes you hit a home run, but most of the time in a good ball game, you get singles. And you just keep hitting a single, and before you know it, you win the ball game.
Kasich says the air park is an asset there that will be leveraged to attract more companies. Wilmington Mayor Randy Riley says the city's rebuilding, and he says he's hopeful that more jobs are on the way.
And with the help of a lot of people that you see here today, not only is this a celebration, but this is the answer to a lot of prayers. Every morning when my feet hit the ground, the first thing out of my mouth is a prayer for jobs.
The six companies range from advanced manufacturing to air cargo transport. In total, it's expected to generate over $18 million in new payroll. For WYSO, I'm Emily McCord.
Governor Kasich's public-private job creation entity, Jobs Ohio, has been on the minds of lawmakers this week as the House and Senate have passed a bill to limit the auditor's authority to examine it. Ohio Public Radio's Statehouse Bureau Chief Joe Ingles spoke with Emily about all of that.
Welcome, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
Robs Ohio is what the Democratic Party chairman calls the economic development entity Jobs Ohio. What's everyone so upset about?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Jobs Ohio is a private, nonprofit jobs creation corporation, or at least that's what it's being called. That's the way it's being developed. And what that exactly means is that it really has built into it some private functions. Governor Kasich, when he was creating this, says that Ohio needs to do business like businesses do business, and that you can't have a state agency doing business that, you know, moves at a snail's pace, that doesn't talk business language. So Jobs Ohio was created with the idea of having a structure and some people who are very versed in business, who can go out and attract other businesses and know what to do to make that happen quickly.
But part of its funding comes from state liquor sales, as I understand it, and that is public money, correct?
Right. And that's the bulk of the funding, actually. When you look at one of the more lucrative places that the state gets money, it is the liquor money that comes in. Liquor, you know, sales and the taxes on the sales, that money all goes to the state. And what they've done is negotiated a long-term lease on those liquor profits. That money goes to Jobs Ohio. Now, here's where the problem is. You've got State Auditor Dave Yost, who says, hey, that is public money. Those are taxes. That's money that's coming into the state. And then you're taking that money and you're giving it to this private, you know, nonprofit company. So therefore, he thinks he has the right to go in there and see how that money's being spent to make sure it's not being misspent. And it's not only Auditor Yost that feels that way. We see some lawsuits that have come against Jobs Ohio that make the same claim. They say that Jobs Ohio is unconstitutional because it's basically a quasi-public company that's not abiding by the rules that have been set forth through the Constitution for it.
And Governor Kasich and fellow Republicans say there are some things that should remain private when it comes to bringing companies to Ohio. Governor Kasich was in Wilmington Thursday highlighting the companies coming to the city through work with Jobs Ohio, and here's what he had to say.
First of all, you certainly do not want to have any things leaking out in terms of the businesses we're working on, but Jobs Ohio is probably the most scrutinized private entity in Ohio today. I mean, they're audited. There's all this information has been turned over to the auditor for the last year. But Jobs Ohio is a not-for-profit entity.
So is he right that Jobs Ohio is getting special scrutiny?
Yeah. That's a very subjective thing to look at as to whether it's getting more scrutiny than first of all, it's in the news. And it's in the news because it's the only thing of its kind like it. You know, there's nothing else in government that really has the same features. But as far as state agencies, we know state agencies get audited all the time. That's part of the, you know, part of the auditor's function is to see how money's being spent with certain state programs. And, you know, we look at the schools. The schools get audited often. Cities, you know, anyone that's getting government money can be audited. But with Jobs Ohio, it is audited. The governor is right. There are audits. But the audits are done by private companies. And the audits are very vague. When the reporters get the audits, it will be listed in a way that you really don't see exactly where the money went. You know, we've seen some news reports where, you know, they've spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on things like office furniture and coffee bars and, you know, different things like that. And it does raise eyebrows because you sit there and you think, okay, this money that they are getting from the liquor profits are being used at Jobs Ohio. And if that is the case, how much money is being spent on things like that versus, you know, being spent on legitimate deals. So it raises some questions.
With Republicans controlling both chambers and with a Republican governor, is this pretty much a done deal, this amendment that will block the auditor from being able to examine Jobs Ohio spending?
Yes. The governor is expected to sign it. You know, basically, this is one of those issues that it won't be news until it is. When investigative reporters get in there and they're able to find a lot of problems and you've got the public questioning it a lot, then, you know, then it'll be news. But otherwise, right now, it's, you know, the governor is expected to sign it and it's probably going to be business as usual over there.
I've been speaking with Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. My in-studio guest is Mona Vollmer, Chief Development Officer with the Air Force Museum Foundation. Mona, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you are new to this position with the foundation, and I'd like to get a little bit of your background. You grew up in Yellow Springs?
I grew up in Yellow Springs, graduated Yellow Springs High School in 1979, so long, long time ago. Went to University of Cincinnati and graduated in communication arts and was commissioned as a second lieutenant and went to the Air Force after that and spent great deal of time doing wonderful things in the Air Force. I'm still an active reservist out at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and have had the opportunity to really travel the world and see wonderful things and landed back in Ohio in 1996. I tell everybody I am an American airman. That is ingrained into my being. So the obvious natural choice for me was to continue my service as I see it, working for the Air Force in this capacity. Although I'm not a civil service employee, I am part of the nonprofit organization. Our position, our whole reason for being as a nonprofit foundation is to help the National Museum of the United States Air Force with their mission. So the foundation, we exist to help them expand their programs and their facilities. So all the dollars that we raise, all of the revenue that we get from our business units is in some manner gifted to the Air Force to use to expand facilities, to continue programs, educational programs, things like that. So for me, this was absolutely a perfect fit for me to continue serving in my Air Force.
Let's talk about some of the cornerstone operations that help support the museum.
The museum itself is an Air Force organization. So the National Museum, United States Air Force, is in and of itself an Air Force organization. The foundation is the nonprofit corporation, Ohio Corporation, and our sole purpose is to raise money. Business revenues include the museum store, the cafe that we have, the theater, the brand new refurbished theater that I hope you've had a chance to
visit. I have.
Biggest screen in the area. It's digital 3D. It's absolutely a wow experience. And so that is one of our business revenues. We have also our membership. You can become a friend of the National Museum of the United States Air Force for as little as $30 a year. You can receive our journal. So all of those business units are the way that we generate revenue. And then in addition to that, one of my core objectives, of course, is to do fundraising development. So my job is ongoing, but primarily right now, my focus is on raising money for our fourth building, for the museum's fourth building. And we're at the tail end. We're almost there. We've got about $38 million of the required $46 million so that we can help them. We can gift that money and help them with this fourth building.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you received a substantial grant in January for that?
Well, we've been fortunate enough to have a great deal of support from aerospace corporations, from local companies, et cetera. So our leaders, quite frankly, are Lockheed Martin and Boeing. They were the huge grantors, Lockheed Martin with a $10 million pledge and Boeing with a $5 million pledge. But we've been fortunate enough in having Aerojet come through, United Technologies, and locally here, Fifth Third, Vectren. So great deal of support from the corporations as well as individuals. So it's been great support, but we're still looking for those final dollars and continuing the fundraising that way.
And perhaps you can put into words why those companies are choosing to support the foundation and the museum's mission.
Absolutely. The fourth building is going to house four different galleries, and specifically those are going to bring in the presidential aircraft, the research and development aircraft that are behind the wire, so to speak. So there's some aircraft that are in hangars on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base proper that only about 8% of our visitors get to see. And currently, those are unfortunately shuttered because of sequestration and budget cuts. So right now, our guests are not seeing those aircraft at all. Those two galleries, bringing them over to the main campus of the museum and incorporating them in this fourth building will make them available to all of our visitors. Then we're going to have an expanded space gallery and then also our global reach gallery. So four galleries in that fourth building that will be available for all of our – we have about 1.2 million visitors to the museum every year, and they'll be able to see those aircraft, and specifically with the crew compartment trainer, which is the very heart and soul of the trainer for the astronauts. That is part of our display, and we're going to build around it a mock-up of the shuttle, which will be fully accessible to all of our guests and will be available that people can actually get inside of it and see the displays and touch the displays. It'll be interactive. It'll be used for science, technology, engineering, and math components of education. So the aerospace industry, the other corporations see this as a win-win situation. They can showcase these types of aircraft, but also help with that vital interest that we have in developing that STEM education for our future generations.
You mentioned sequestration, and the tentacles of those budget cuts are fairly far-reaching. And so the foundation and the museum have been affected by that. Let's talk about to what extent.
The main message I want everybody to hear is the museum is open. The National Museum of the United States Air Force is still open 7 days a week, 9 to 5. That is the main message. We're open for business. The two galleries that I talked about earlier that are closed are on the main campus of Wright-Patt, and those were closed for budget cut reasons, sequestration, budget cuts, etc. So unfortunately, we had to shutter those doors, close them down. That does a couple of things. It saves on the utilities, and it saves on the shuttle bus that we were running from the main campus of the museum over to Wright-Patt. Those costs were just absolutely necessary to absorb back into the budget. But There are some other things that we've had to do internally. As you mentioned in your story earlier this week, some of the family days are having to be canceled, and some of the events that we had canceled, trying to keep those to a minimum. But the main message here is that the museum is open 7 days a week, free admission, free parking, and 9 to 5.
And so it's unclear how far into the future sequestration will have effect on various entities within military operations. And so how do you compensate that as director of a foundation in search of funds?
That's a good question. We're being very creative, I think, as all development offices are. I've touched base with some of the other advancement and development teams for nonprofits and getting very creative and trying to find some solutions that still give the donor some benefit and try to find some of those things that fit well with their objectives. So we're getting a little bit more creative and trying to hear back from the donors what they would like to, us to incorporate, quite frankly. But it is a little bit downturn of economy. We're hoping that picks up and just we'll continue to fundraise until the very end and hoping to reach that $46 million that we need for this fourth building.
You've got a lot of enthusiasm behind the museum as it is now. Projections beyond once that fourth building is up and running, what's on the horizon?
The museum is probably the better person to talk about the absolute plans, but of course they have additional plans. Once we get the fourth building, there are some add-ons that we want to make that fourth building better. Beyond that, of course, we want to continue to develop the exhibits inside, develop the programming. One of the really big benefits of this fourth building are within those galleries, we're going to have three different what we call STEM learning nodes. And so one of the museum's objectives, their core missions, is to help advance that STEM mission. So within those learning nodes, one of their plans is once the building is there, they continue to build out those exhibits, and they're going to be theater-style seating built around very interactive computer displays, etc. We'll have about 60 seats available for teachers to come in and do interactive lessons, to have different guest speakers come in and talk science, technology, engineering, and math subjects to guests. And then when they're not being used in that manner, they can have displays running and kind of be available for guests throughout the museum throughout the day. So those are some of their plans. Of course, they've got big plans for additional buildings after that and to continue to build out. They have thousands of artifacts that currently are not on display. So, of course, their thoughts are to continue to bring those out and rotate them out and build displays and interactive exhibits, etc. So they have big plans for the future to continue that. There will always be plans to build more and bring more exhibits out.
And so how does that dynamic work between the museum and the foundation? They express their ideas and goals for the future, and then the foundation takes a look at that and moves forward with those things in mind?
Well, what I like to say is between the foundation and the museum, it's one team, one fight. So the museum, absolutely, the staff of the museum, there's about 95 staff members that do just an absolutely terrific job of building those interactive displays, building the education programs, etc., and really taking their direction from the Air Force Heritage Program. That's where they get their policy and their direction, and execute that mission based on Big Air Force's goals for them. And then they'll develop the programs, the objectives, things that they want to incorporate based on those plans, and sit down and have a chat with the foundation. The strategic planning, that partnership between the foundation and the museum, is absolutely we're on the same sheet of music when it comes to that. So we'll talk about those plans both years out as well as very near term and figure out what the foundation can do to help with those. A good example of that is when the museum was faced with closing one day a week based on their utility costs, and the foundation was able to go to their board of managers and ask for that money to help pay for those utilities to keep the museum doors open. So great partnership there, great way of communicating with each other to help us both achieve our goals. And of course, keep the museum open, because the main goal is to keep that museum open so our visitors can continue to have that connection with their Air Force, with their military. It is a national treasure, and that is truly the message here. National Museum of the United States Air Force is available online via their virtual tour and is available here in the region to visit. So please come out and visit. The museum's open for business, and we want you to come out and enjoy this national treasure.
Mona Vollmer, Chief Development Officer with the Air Force Museum Foundation. Thanks for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on. Thank you very much.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks again for joining us this Sunday morning. This week on Reinvention Stories, we meet Kelly Daly, owner of Funk Lab Dance Studio and Creative Arts Center in Kettering. Daly grew up in Bellbrook and studied nursing at Wright State University. She worked as a psychiatric nurse at Good Samaritan Hospital and Kettering Medical Center. Early in her career, she decided to be a nurse and a dancer. Now she runs the Funk Lab Dance Studio full-time.
I've always known that dance was my main desire since I was seven, probably. And I actually had my own, like, neighborhood dance studio. There was all these little girls on my street. I would dress them in all my dance costumes, and we would do, like, a picture week. And I would type up newsletters to their families. I sort of had, like, this little business going, you know, on my street when I was really very young. But I, you know, I've been told my whole life that you can't make a career out of dance. I was a nurse for 2 years. I realized, you know, I really want to focus my career on dance, and nursing will help me do that, of course, help me pay for that, and I can help people in that way, but also it will help me with my main desire, which was dance. So I wanted to be able to street dance, and those opportunities were not available in Dayton. I took my training to Chicago and New York, Atlanta, and some other big cities to learn the more intricate styles of urban choreography. I had traveled to Chicago multiple times per year to train and dance, and I just wanted it to be more convenient. And my husband is also an artist himself, and we thought that it would be easier for him to locate a job in the arts if we moved to Chicago. We did realize after about a month that it wasn't for us. It was really, really fast-paced. We weren't finding that people were overly friendly, and it just was not what we had pictured it being. It was not really for us. I really liked that. I felt appreciated in Dayton. I felt proud of myself. And I felt like in Chicago, I wasn't going to get the same opportunities there because there were so many people trying to do what I was doing. And I just feel as though I'm more of value here than I am somewhere where people are fighting for the same thing. So I came back and decided that I would make it my mission to try to bring some of the big city hip-hop styles here. And I knew that in order to do that, I was going to have to train those younger than myself and try to build a community of us dancers here. And when I realized 2 years ago that the community that I had built here in Dayton for hip-hop dance could be a successful business so that I could support myself just doing that, then I realized, you know, I'm going to go ahead and open up my own school. I think there's a lot of kids out there that really enjoy dancing, and they don't tend to want to go to traditional dance studios. At our facility, the environment is such that we have graffiti on the walls. We play our music quite loud, so they can really hear the beats so that they're dancing too. It's something that is fun and gets kids out of trouble, and that also provides a venue for self-expression and positive reinforcement that it's a valuable art to take away the negative stereotype of hip-hop. I think people need to realize there's a positive side to it, and I think that's happening because I have a handful of students who are so incredibly talented. And everywhere they go, people are just commenting, you know, how wonderful they are, and I can't believe they can do this, and you know, it's just incredible. The personalities that are coming out in these kids, it's just, you know, we let them be who they want to be. They don't have to, you know, sort of stiffen up and put a smile on their face. You know, they can kind of have whatever expression they want. And it comes out in their dance. It's just wonderful all around. I can't think of a single complaint that I have about it. And I just know that, you know, I will definitely not regret this as a decision. And I know that I will lead a happier life because of it. Dayton, I feel like, has been up and coming for the last couple of years. I feel like there's a community of people that are dedicated to making it a better place. A lot of young urban professionals that are, you know, creating a community out there and that are trying to create recognition for the city. And over time, I think that it may take years, but I think that it will be back.
That was Kelly Daly, owner of the Funk Lab Dance Studio in Kettering. To see a short film about Kelly, visit WYSO.org. This Reinvention Story was produced by Megan Haig and Sarah Buckingham. Reinvention Stories is brought to you by WYSO and Local Lore, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents and Radio Incorporated, in collaboration with ZEGA, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's it for this week's edition of Why So Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WYSO.org. We are a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.